We are discussing the mystery of Christ's resurrection, or I'd rather say the effect of Christ's resurrection. We can also call it a mystery, meaning that indeed it is inconceivable for us. How is it possible? Then it is also a mystery in any case of resurrection. For example, the resurrection of Lazarus. How is it possible? But in this particular case, the bottom line is different. Apostle Paul calls Jesus Christ the firstborn from the dead. It's strange. Why is he firstborn from the dead? Wasn't there anyone before him? Yes, there was. The prophet Elia, who resurrected a boy, and Christ himself resurrected Lazarus. Why is he firstborn? The cases of other people who were resurrected by virtue of Jesus Christ himself, or the prophets, or apostles, are just some single facts that have no meaning for other people. He resurrected, and that's it. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is absolutely different, because by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, by means of his sufferings and death and his resurrection in the end, the change in principle, the salvation, the restoration, and the recovery of human nature itself took place. It's not a single fact that Jesus Christ is risen which matters. No, the bottom line is that by means of these sufferings and death, which were inevitable for this act, the human nature recovered from the damage which came as the result of fall of man, of Adam and Eve. As the result, the recovery of nature took place in the very essence. Where? And here comes an amazing teaching. The Holy Fathers, just one after another, write the surprising words. Even the translators of the New Testament stumbled here. In the Epistle to Jews, the translators wrote the following: For it was fitting for him, for God, to make the captain of their salvation, meaning Christ. Then comes a Greek word teleose, which means to make perfect in the Russian language. What did they write? For it was fitting for him to make the captain of their salvation through sufferings. What did God make through sufferings? It doesn't make any sense at all. To make the captain of salvation through sufferings. What does it mean? They didn't translate it. Why not? Of course, wasn't Jesus Christ perfect? What a heresy and blasphemy. It turns out, yes, indeed, but meaning what? Jesus Christ was perfect in his purity and holiness, but he took our nature, which is mortal, perishable, and vulnerable. That's why he lived, suffered, and even died with this nature that he took, and he healed it and resurrected it, this nature, where? In himself. He healed the nature that he took in himself, and thus, as this nature has now recovered from mortality, perishability, and vulnerability, that's it. It resurrected. So what follows from this? What do we get from this? What do we get from this? It turns out the following. First, we were born unconsciously, without our awareness or will. Here and now, we can be born consciously in a different way. We can take this new, renovated nature in ourselves to be reborn in the sacrament of baptism. Only if a person takes the sacrament of baptism with faith, and not just as that, a person receives a seed of this new nature. It's just a seed which they can really grow. And as it grows, meaning as a person lives a spiritual life depending on the extent of its activity, they can join in and become like that new nature which Jesus Christ resurrected via his sufferings and death. That's how one assimilates with Christ. That's how one gets saved. This is the essence of resurrection. And this person in whom the seed grows will be resurrected in the God-like nature, or I'd rather say in co-essential with him human nature. That's what Christ's resurrection is, and not just one of the many cases in history when someone resurrected someone else, when someone resurrected, okay, they resurrected, and so what? Nothing. They resurrected, and then they died. But it's not like this in this case. Christ doesn't die anymore, and every person who gets united with him receives all the blessing of salvation that Christianity tells us about. By the way, in no other religion before Christianity, they could even get the idea that God could be crucified. Only somebody crazy can say that God would allow to crucify himself. Christianity has this unique truth that couldn't be found anywhere else. Where could Jesus Christ or apostles take it from? Nowhere. There were no such teachings. There was no such an idea. For pagans, the idea of Christ's crucifixion was unnatural. That's why Apostle Paul says, "We preach Christ crucified to the Jews, a stumbling block." Of course, to the Jews who were and, by the way, are still waiting for an earthly emperor, and to the Greeks, meaning all the other nations. Foolishness, of course, because everyone is waiting, as they used to say, for a new August. August was one of the most outstanding emperors of the Roman Empire. Due to him, the empire flourished and achieved its power. Everyone is waiting for an August at long last, who at long last will come and provide prosperity for all the people. What kind of prosperity? It's the prosperity on earth. So what are the proofs of Christ's resurrection? That's interesting. One can write anything. The paper will tolerate anything. If we turn to the historical science, we can put a well-grounded question. What is considered reliable in history? did Napoleon exist? But there are works written claiming that Napoleon never existed. It's just a myth. In history, a fact is what's confirmed by a number of witnesses. Napoleon did exist because we can provide a whole number of witnesses of people who saw him, participated in those events, and so on. A great number of people tell us directly about Jesus Christ, and not just some people, but those who were there with him, as John the theologian says, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled concerning the word of life. Just look how many authors the New Testament has. They are independent from each other, even though they were all Christ's disciples, and they wrote about it as of a fact. And it's interesting that the messages about Christ's resurrection are not identical by far. There are discrepancies. Who was the first one to see the resurrected Christ? Who entered the tomb and who didn't? Was there a conversation or not? Who was the first one to see him? According to the tradition, it was the Virgin Mary. According to one of the Gospels, it was Mary Magdalene. According to other Gospels, it was John or Peter or the 12 disciples together. These are different messages. Isn't it a discrepancy or a contradiction? Yes, it is. Only if one never studied the legal science can they regard such differences as a negative fact. On the contrary, when something happens, especially a crime, and the witnesses are being interrogated independently from each other, there come some amazing facts, and they always warn students at the Faculty of Law that if all the witnesses say exactly the same things, you must know for sure it is a collusion. If there are differences, but the main fact is the same, it is the strongest psychological argument in favor of the truthfulness of the event in question. And one of the strongest witnesses is that people died for this fact, but they wouldn't reject it, they wouldn't deny it or betray. How many people die for different reasons? Yes, indeed, but never before in the history of humanity can we find such a fact as we come across in the Christian history. I mean the quantity of martyrs. Never ever had it happened. It's an unbelievable phenomenon. People suffered terrible tortures for the confession of this fact. We should realize that there is indeed the religious experience, and it's a fact. It's the experience of God, a person who started the correct and active spiritual life, makes sure that there is God, and makes sure in his inexplicable love, and people are ready to sacrifice their lives for it. Saint Ephraim the Syrian says the following: if we don't suffer with Christ on the Calvary, we won't resurrect with him. Can I conclude from here that every person has to go through some sufferings or weaknesses in life, and that they are necessary for every person? No, Here, something different is meant by Saint Ephraim the Syrian. They say there were martyrs in the first century, and there were martyrs in the 20th century. Who are the martyrs? They are the people who were persecuted, beaten up, tortured, or killed for the Christian faith and life. And what do the Holy Fathers write about it? They say the martyrs are also those ascetics who fought their passions. They were called the bloodless martyrs. Here comes a short poem, but not by Holy Father, of course. The inner battle is the hardest of battles, as well as self-conquest is the greatest of victories. Just try to conquer your selfishness, or at least your stomach. It is impossible. And what about vanity and many other things? That's why Saint Ephraim the Syrian says that one should go or ascend the Calvary, because the Calvary is fighting the passions, and the resurrection of Christ is a fact, and the historical science offers us the criteria for us. And for any people, even not for believers, to make sure, and we can be sure because it is a real historical fact on the same grounds as any other historical event. Алексей Ильич, without doubting the fact of Christ's resurrection itself, for many people who live after the resurrection, the fact of the reality of Christ's resurrection in life of every particular person is very important. So this fact took place in the past, but how can we realize this resurrection in our life? What are the means for this for us? I think that the Orthodox Church offers us the holy sacraments. And now I have the second question. So are the sacraments enough for a person to realize the fact of Christ's resurrection in their life, or is there something more than that? I often communicate with the Western Christians, and I was very surprised that there they consider the participation in sacraments to be the spiritual life, or I'd rather say that they think that all the spiritual life is about the sacraments. And for the Protestants, it's just the communion. And for the Catholics, it's just a formal matter. But the spiritual life is not just about the participation in sacraments. If we speak of Saint Maria from Egypt, she took communion only three times in the course of her life, and the robber from the right of Jesus Christ never took any communion or never confessed. But the spiritual life is a different thing. There is a science in the Orthodox Christianity, which is the ascetics. The computer would translate the word ascet as a sportsman, because it's like a sports competition. It means that you work hard. So this is the science about the correct spiritual life. What is the correct spiritual life? There are the laws of spiritual life, and you are told about them, but when I studied, they never told us about this. Of course, they told us about the commandments and morals, but about the loss of spiritual life, never. So now it turns out that the spiritual life is not some chaos of some mystical states or impressions, no. It's a real science with its laws and foundations, one of which is that salvation is received not for the virtue and not for the hard work for its sake. These are not my words, so you please don't throw stones at me. These are the words of Saint Ephraim the Syrian. Once I told this to Lutherans, and they were so happy about these words, because the salvation is not virtue and not work for it. And I said, it's not the end. Wait a second, please. And then salvation is received by the humility that comes due to the virtue and hard work. And if you have no humility, all your virtues and works are vain. So the essence of the spiritual life comes to the understanding, if I really need Christ, if I am good enough, I have many good deeds that I do, I work hard, and at the same time I think about myself very high, then all my work is in vain, because a person can only be saved by God if they see that they need salvation, because I can't help envying, I can't help hating, I can't help judging people. But what can you do? You can put a candle, or what can you do? What can you do? Can you bow? God doesn't need it. So, and what do you do in your soul? What is the essence of the Christian ascetic life? It is for a person at long last to see that indeed that they can't do anything good. If they do something good, the poison of vanity appears in their soul right away. So the salvation is the understanding and experience of the necessity of Christ, because this is the faith. Oh Lord, please help me, because I see that I can't cope by myself. So when a person sees their weakness and they turn to Christ, this saves a person. But it's not so easy to reach the state. Why? Because I believe myself to be a good man. So if we speak of the essence of the Christian religion, we should say that in the end it comes down to the fact of Christ's resurrection. It was all done for this. That's what Jesus came for. This is the salvation itself. Apostle Paul says, if Christ is not risen, then our preaching is empty, and your faith is empty, and we are of all men the most pitiable, because the salvation is the eternal life, and not just the life of spirit, which is just a part of the human nature, but of the whole person.